casa, hoy es más fuerte, yo no voy a cambiar, renace, mantengo la trascendencia, echen para acá,
echen para acá,
y griten libertad, hoy es más fuerte, yo no voy a cambiar, mantengo la trascendencia, mantengo la trascendencia, no te diviertes en las cosas, pero no interrumpir mis costumbres. Nada tiene que ver con mantener tu mala conducta.
Claro.
Haz un esfuerzo por entenderme y apunta que lo que te estamos comunicando es sobre nuestra identificación, socialización, postura, asimilación, paz y amor.
Gracias.
Bueno, como siempre, esto es un tema que nos representa mucho al grupo Hermanazo y que por eso quisimos verlo como una entrada, pero además forma parte también de las costumbres y de la manera de pensar de Obsesión y del proyecto de las familias.
This is a song that means a lot to us, to this band, Hermanazos, and that's why we wanted to start this concert with this song. This is part of our tradition, our origin.
Okay. Entonces, pues nada, ahora queremos hacer un tema que es muy representativo para nosotros, porque es como pidiendo cada vez más fuerza, más unión y más decisión.
So now we're going to sing a song that represents a lot to us. This song is about our request for unity or decision making
in America
or in all the countries in the Americas.
Pues creemos que siempre que empecemos de nosotros podemos entonces repartir a los demás.
Because we believe that we have to start changing things first with us so that we can share our things with the rest of people.
Okay.
Sí, siéntelo, vamos. Con, vaya, eso es.
Estoy buscando la paz,
la unión.
¿Cómo?
Con amor.
Dale,
muévelo, eso es.
Ponlo
bien. ¿Cómo
es? Es Hermanazos.
Vamos, sienta.
Ahí.
Apoyemos.
Eso es.
América, siéntela,
siéntela.
No puedes rendirte, son bombas que caen sobre cabezas infelices, caray. ¿Cómo pudieron? ¿Qué fue lo que hicieron? Son niños, mujeres, ancianos, humanos. Los que murieron, los que mataron, son asesinos y andan sueltos. Debemos estar preparados.
Dale.
Seamos un pueblo, seamos paz. Seamos la fuerza, seamos la paz. La inteligencia será natural. En cada cerebro habrá pensamiento. Doy un sentimiento que despertar. Y un sentimiento que despertar. Así que decirte a quien te maraña lo que te roba, luego te engaña. El enemigo se viste de amigo. Pa' quien no conoce lo que es la amistad, se va a utilizar, se va a utilizar. Yo sé que te va a utilizar. América, libérate, quítate encima, sí, que te pides. América, únete, siente que ya llegué. América, siénteme, atiéndeme, libérate. América, rompe cadena. América, busquemos la paz. Atención, para los pueblos de la región, necesitamos la unión, ya no queda otra opción. A ver si a Cuba le quitan el bloqueo y ustedes la explotación. Vamos para la lucha, con el permiso del Señor. Yo no estoy predicando violencia, sino la liberación. Está bueno ya de egoísmo, los ricos se hacen más ricos y los pobres de cabeza al abismo. Debido al capitalismo, los presidentes de falsas promesas, es lo mismo con lo mismo. Aumenta el desempleo, el hambre se degrada el humanismo. Por eso, a partir de ese momento, hay que hacer un nuevo manifiesto para que se manda a mano y se va con el pecho y la clase va, tenga sus propios derechos. Por cierto, aquí está Hermanazo con sus principios. América, libérate, quita de sí, me pide que te pisa. América, únete, siente que ya llegué. América, siénteme, atiéndeme, libérate. América, rompe cadena. América, busquemos la paz. América, libérate, quita de sí, me pide que te pisa. América, únete, siente que ya llegué. América, siénteme, atiéndeme, libérate. América, rompe cadena. América, busquemos la paz.
Argentina,
represento.
Brasil,
represento.
Bolivia,
represento.
Chile,
represento.
México,
represento.
Venezuela,
represento.
Cuba,
represento.
Latinoamérica,
represento. América, libérate, quítate encima, fíjate en mí. América, represento.
Gracias. Y entonces seguimos con
Obsesión.
Obsesión. La matriz de muchos. Sí.
Bueno, este tema tiene que ver con la neutralidad. Este tema tiene que ver con el grupo Obsesión. Es una presentación.
This first song has to do is about this band Obsesión. It's like our introduction.
Pero que no solamente nos incluye a nosotros, sino también a otros artistas que también están haciendo, desde sus manifestaciones, también están aportando los cambios sociales.
This is a song that introduces not only us, but also other artists who are presenting new projects.
Ok, entonces cuando quieran.
Dime. No sé qué, hermano, vamos a seguir la guía, yo tengo mejor número para tirar eso. Ponme que lo que pasa, mi hermano.
No entiendo
eso.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM or freakradio.org, depending on where you're at, it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides, and it's April 5th, 2007, and I'm late, but I'm here, so let's go.
New beginnings. Always seeing the tunnel at the end of the light. And that's a good thing. Each of us can do something. Do the right thing. It is a time for new beginnings. Always seeing the tunnel at the end of the light. Something. In the name of peace, we reach a reasonable conclusion. One way to secure the peace is
to love and to serve one another.
Pure and simple. People everywhere, from all walks of life, got the responsibility to make the world more peaceful. On your behalf,
it is a way forward. It's incredibly positive news.
That will bring lasting peace. Something's wrong with the system.
They must hear your voice that the system needs to be updated.
You advocate these values around the world.
Thank you very much.
It is a time for new beginnings. Always seeing the tunnel at the end of the light.
And that's a good thing.
Each of us can do something.
Do the right thing.
It is the time for new beginnings. Always seeing the tunnel at the end of the light.
And that's a good thing.
Each of us can do something. In the name of peace.
And it remains the great duty of mankind.
And pass along. As neighbor helps neighbor,
as quickly as possible,
before people get hurt. Each of us can do some good by loving a neighbor just like you'd like to be loved yourself.
Thank you very much. For the sake of peace,
help a neighbor in need.
I don't think that's too high a standard.
And I hope you'll join me
in the name of peace.
I think it's a difference of attitude. It is a call to conscience. It is a new world.
At 3:35, I'm out here outside the Cornucopia Real Estate Land, across from the Georgiana Bruce Kirby Preparatory School, talking with this non-stop talking man. Your name, sir?
Ron, I'm a professional litterbug.
Yes, and Ron, I actually caught you sitting around here near the Santa Cruz Art Center, and you've left behind certain garments.
For girls that are homeless and cold, starving to death, freezing to death.
I see. Not just because
little
you're
girls.
Too lazy to put them somewhere else.
No, the girls will find them. Nicole, ground score.
Yeah, well, I would hope so. But let me ask you this. You say that you recently had a
confrontation with the police.
Tell me about that.
Arrested for not showing up for throwing down a cigarette butt.
Now, when were you arrested and where?
Well, Wendy wrenched my arm.
Wendy Bynes?
The cop officer.
A tall woman?
Shaved her head.
I have no idea, but
she... Shaved her head for cancer.
Oh, okay.
And took my wrist and just wrenched it almost.
Now, where were you arrested?
In front of the pasta place across from old school on Pacific Avenue.
Now, when did this happen?
Well, the yuppies would turn their nose up and eat.
Of course. When did this happen?
A while back.
Well, like a month, 2 months,
now.
3 years?
2 months ago.
2 months ago. Now, what...
You appeared on a cigarette butt.
What did the failure to appear on the littering by dropping a cigarette?
I'm a professional litter bug.
Now, have you paid your debt to society by dealing with the cigarette menace?
Let me go in 2 days.
So you were held in jail for 2 days?
For cigarette butt.
This was several months ago.
Oh, quite a while back.
This is old news. Now, what about some new arrests? Let's get busy here, Ron. What's cooking?
I went to the... apparently Margaret Law, attorney of law, is representing me for some stuff.
Margaret who?
Law, attorney of law.
So her last name is Law?
Margaret Law, attorney of law.
Okay, fair enough.
My court-appointed new lawyer.
And what is she defending you in what case?
In a meeting, this girl said, have you had anybody put a boot up your ass? I said, no. And the guy goes, I'm going to crack your back in half so I can pull a knife in the meeting. And they said, go outside with that. And the guy followed me and then called the police. Hernandez wrenched my arm and almost broke it.
When was this?
About a month ago.
And what were you charged with?
Nothing, because the knife was in my pocket. The guy, it was his word against mine. He's on the cell phone. He's in my block. There is my logo.
Were you taken to jail?
Oh, he ruined my arm, shoved me in the ground. I had to go to Dominican. Yeah, they let me go in 8 hours.
I see. So they...
I beat a nice boy.
No charges?
Well, no, I had a court hearing, and I went to court.
What was the charge?
The guy didn't show up in court. Bernard didn't show up.
But what was the charge?
I don't know. I was gonna come on outside. If you're gonna crack my back and kill me, then I'll do you out here.
Did the officer tell you what he was charging you with?
A knife.
Ah, possession of a knife.
It was in my pocket at the time. As Hernandez wrenched my arm, shoved me in the concrete, tore my shoulder skin off, and then the white guys came, and they said, oh, it's him. Throw him in the car. And he's trying to cut me with my arm being broken, trying to find the knife. I said, it's in my pocket. And he was shoving my face in the concrete.
Now,
so the white cops came.
So that case has been...
Hernandez, the cracker eater.
It has been dismissed and so forth.
Oh, yeah, it's all gone. Now, I have to go to a court hearing on a traffic citation. Apparently, my car has been driven around. It was stolen in Stockton in July 2005. So they're going to go, well, you can't be driving if it's... No. So they'll throw that out, too.
So they
came back and got tickets here.
You're free as a bird.
In my stolen car.
So you have no more tickets.
Not yet.
Well, let's get busy.
However, I was allowed Nelson, asked the heavyset girl for the ball. She goes, it's been checked out. Then I watched and watched. I want to shoot a little hoop, you know, 55, little workout. And then the thin girl, Willie's girlfriend, the janitor, said, oh, it's in there. Go get it. So I go get it, and the heavyset girl was eating lunch. She didn't want to...
Go get what?
Basketball.
The what?
The basketball.
Right.
Loud note. The heavyset girl's eating lunch. She didn't want to get the basketball.
And so?
I checked it out. So I went outside. And then the skinny girl, Willie's madly in love with, the janitor girl, everybody's madly in love with.
We're getting a little
personal. Anyway, I go in, and she goes, the basketball's in there.
Yeah.
A new girl goes, wait a minute. I said, I want the ball. I'm going to call the police. I've had a problem with you. And they told me don't come back till tonight to an NA meeting. And then Wendy again with the cops on... In front of Loud Nelson, say, what's the problem? Hey, wait a minute now. She goes, I can throw you down the ground right now again.
Mm-hmm.
Don't move. Is it 577 or whatever?
When was this?
About an hour ago when I won the basketball.
Oh. Did you ever find the basketball?
There's the basketball. The girl said, it's in the basket. Go get it. The girl that skinny Jenner said, you can go get it, Ron.
But the other one said no.
Both of them did.
Okay.
They called the police.
So what was the outcome?
The man-eaters.
The outcome of this police encounter was?
I said, I'll never play basketball again. I'm like Woody Harrelson. I can't jump. They just cured me of ever wanting to be a white basketball player ever again.
Maybe they thought you were a guy with too many balls.
Well, I have two.
Thank you very much.
Give me one.
Thank you, Ron. Anything else?
Because she's a cock eater.
Thank you. I hear another suspicious-looking individual. Your name, sir?
Bubby, before we go on to that, if we ever do, I kind of want to sign in and... note that I've already received one request from a faithful caller to go on to give a public statement about the latest Sentinel story, which some people may have read. I think it was in the Sentinel yesterday about the city council. The city council repression case is what I call it. The case of city council's false arrests, which is now going to be appealed and is going to take another few years to get anywhere, or maybe less, who knows. And what I'm going to do about that whole case is I'm going to actually play you a little segment of what I said on KSCO this morning. They actually gave me a call and they asked for my view, and they were very critical of my behavior. And for those who don't know, it's all very well described in the segment, so I don't need to go into it. But I will, of course. And for those who want more information about it, and this has to do with city council's repression, you know, going after activists it doesn't like for silent forms of protest that they find indecorous or offensive or unpleasant, or, and then they like to call that disruption, even though they themselves are disrupting their own meeting. And that's been my claim and will be my claim when this case finally gets to a jury, hopefully in a year or two, which is what I'm told by my attorneys is likely to happen. And we're going to talk a little bit about that after you hear this presentation to KSCO. We begin with a bit of a news clip that they had on KSCO earlier. It's not the full news clip, but it gives you an idea of kind of orients you a little bit, and then we're going to go into the brief interview with Rosemary Chalmers of KSCO for this morning.
It's April 4, 2007. KSCO is about to do a call-in show, I understand, talking to some extent about the court case where Judge White decided that a Nazi salute was not protected free speech. That was a front-line story in the Sentinel today.
In a meeting, what he does on the street, and that meetings are not a free speech forum. For KSCO Radio News, I'm Harry Simon.
Norris has had a long history of arguing with city council members. He said he would appeal the decision. And the Farm Bureau says, as legislators in the U.S. and South Korea prepare to discuss free trade agreements between the two nations, their analysts say...
Welcome back, sir.
Yeah, hey, Charlie, I sure appreciate you all running that little piece about Robert there.
Actually, this is a bit that appeared on KGO yesterday, so it is April 4th, and this is not actually it's not from KSCO. My apologies, a bit of confusion here with the tapes. This is from radio station KGO, and it's the first bit is from KSCO, and the second bit is from KGO, and the KGO quote is a caller who's a member of Food Not Bombs calling in and talking with... Let me back up one more time here, because I've been a little bit muddled here on this. KGO did do a small news brief on this. In fact, I actually got a call from somebody in New Jersey, a city council member in New Jersey, who was concerned and supportive of my challenging the city council arrest, or series of arrests, actually. But this actually, that you're about to hear, is something that happened yesterday on KSCO when I think a caller attempted to call in and talk about the issue, David Grace, who's a Food Not Bombs activist, and he was given short shrift by the KSCO host.
I've always considered him somewhat of a patriot. It's been well known that the people that are trying to rob this country blind are doing it in a slow and methodical way. And they're trying to slowly but surely teach us that no, we don't get anything for our taxes. No, services are not, America is not here to help anybody. It's here to be stolen from and robbed from. So whenever I hear him talk, I generally appreciate his tenacity in being able to...
Grace is talking about me, in case you missed the first part of this tape.
Like these crummy so-and-sos.
I don't know what you're alluding to. According to this piece here, this is one of those, quote, homeless advocates, unquote, If I read that correctly, I could be wrong. I don't know the man.
Oh, he is, yeah.
But if I read that correctly, this is one of these people who says, well, I choose to be homeless, therefore you need to provide a place for me to live, and I don't feel any need to do that.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because Robert isn't homeless, but he's one of those that has enough brains to know that it's united you stand, divided you fall. And that America has always been based upon united you stand. And if you see, you know, for example, the homeless problem really got spread in the 80s when Reagan and Bush...
No, I'm sorry. That I'm not going to permit. The homeless problem really got publicized in those days. We had plenty of homeless people before that. But part of the media campaign to discredit the Reagan administration was a sudden discovery that there were people who didn't have places to live. And we were asked to figure that the country was going to hell in a handbasket because of Reagan. And, of course, his administration led to a tremendous surge of prosperity, which allowed many of the homeless to quit being homeless. But and at that point, you stopped seeing as many of those pieces. I would remind you that in the early 1980s, there was a hell of a recession in this country.
Well, I was talking specifically about the savings and loans crooks that never got prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
And the savings and loans crooks...
And actually, the conversation goes into other channels thereafter. I'm trying to actually cue up the proper tape. And haven't done so yet, but I will. Bear with me. Sometime in the next couple of hours. Actually, the show only lasts a couple hours, so I better move fast. While I'm doing a few other street interviews and your patience. And again, if you want to cover the latest, you want to read the latest, not wait for these tapes to come out in the tangled form that I bring them out, you can go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And there's a story on Indie Bay, which you can find at, well, let's see here. You can find it. It's on the right side of the screen. It's called Federal Hoedown in Court with Four Attorneys, Three Mayors, One Cop, and a Bad Judge. And it actually begins before Judge White decided that I was that the case was without merit and, again, for the second time, dismissed it. And refused to let it go to a jury. And then it continues afterward. You actually can read the judge's entire decision on the website in case you think we're trying to keep anything back from you or slant the situation. I have my own opinion on this, of course, and I feel that this is another example of a judge upholding somewhat unquestioningly, and almost less than unquestioningly, he's in a very biased way, without allowing the other side to present its evidence either to a jury or even to him, the claim that there was a disruption that I created when, in fact, this was a disruption that was based upon the sensibilities of one council member, Tim Fitzmaurice, who imposed his view on the council quite effectively. At least that was one of the incidents, and other incidents, of course, which is really the relevant issue, because we're not talking about one false arrest. We're talking about a number of them, two at least in this lawsuit, but a continuing pattern of city council harassment is really the issue. But while I seek to give you this, do check out indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and you get to read the Sentinel story by Shanna McCord. You get to read Becky Johnson's critique of the Sentinel story. She's an activist who was actually a person who filmed this, both incidents that happened, both arrests, one in 2002 and one in 2004, for essentially peaceful behavior that the mayor just didn't like. Didn't stop the meeting. The mayor stopped the meeting because he wanted to intimidate and to dress down the people in the audience who he feel weren't acting properly. Were they taking a crap on the floor? Were they engaging in behavior that would actually really disrupt the meeting in a specific and significant way? And the answer was no. In fact, we were being very careful not to, because we're aware that these mayors have great powers, that they are very sensitive to criticism, and that they don't like homeless issues. And yet at the same time, we have to raise them. And, of course, the basic homeless issue that I was raising in 2004 was, and in 2002 earlier in the day, and it actually, I think, probably had a residue by the time that this mock Nazi salute happened, when the Mayor Crone cut off communications and he cut off the oral communications period for people after he'd promised them that there would be a period of time. He broke his word and intimidated several people directly, threatening them, and then the result of that was a silent Nazi salute. meaning don't act like a bunch of fascists. And that prompted Fitzmaurice to interrupt the meeting and demand I be arrested. And then they went through this whole disruptive process, which they chose, and had me arrested, held in jail. And then they've given their city attorney over $100,000 to fight this case in court, which is, of course, nice for John Barisoni and his wife, and sweet for George Kovacevic and the other city attorneys who are part of that office, but kind of not so good for the rest of us, and not good to uphold arrogant, abusive behavior by city council members. It gives them the feeling that they can do whatever they want, which is not a good idea. Anyway, here's a little more street interviewing, and then we'll get actually to my summation of this to KSCO this morning, which I think was pretty good, so I'm going to play it.
Peabody, nobody. And Peabody, any reports from the downtown area about interesting events you wish to advise us about?
Nothing that I'm really aware of at this time. What about you, Robert?
What can I say? I'm a reporter. I'm an objective observer.
I haven't really seen anything. You know, same old business.
I guess I'm just stuck with an empty tape. Well, thank you, Peabody.
Peabody, nobody.
Peabody, nobody. Thank you, Mr. Nobody. It's 2:20 down here on January 18th in front of New Leaf Market. Here's a man with a sign. Again, although this one looks like an improved version, testing human kindness. So you are a human kindness tester?
Yeah.
And exactly how are you going to be doing this particular experiment?
It's by people, like I'm trying to get people to be more like social with the kids on the streets down here, because a lot of people, it seems, they kick them when they're down. It's like they look at you and they judge you right away and don't know your story and give you glares when you ask them for help and stuff. And it's just like being kicked when you're down.
Now, the last time I saw you, you were at the corner of near the movie theater up the street, the Cinema 9, and you were talking about that there was an issue around the war for you. Your sister was involved in the war.
Mm-hmm. And I don't believe in Bush's war. It's wrong. And the sending more troops over there, that's just, like, everybody needs to see that it's going nowhere. You can't fight violence with violence. All you get is more violence.
And what's been the response on the streets to your sign and to your being here?
I've actually got a lot of like compliments on the sign and the buck push part. Like, a lot of people seem to like that. And I don't know, just with the reading the papers and everything, is starting to seem like a lot of people are realizing that maybe Bush isn't in America's best interest.
No problems with police or hosts?
No, they allow me to fly my sign at night and I've told them that in no way am I asking for money or anything on the sign. That's to get people like to talk to me. Usually other street kids stop and hang out with me, and they end up meeting interesting people, and like, it's just to be more aware with the kids, because I mean, these kids live here too, and I mean, people are afraid of them because they have this stereotype of them, and not all street kids are bad. And a lot of them were just trying to get by. And
you want to introduce me to some folks?
Don't really know what it is. Sweet Pea Pie.
From Humboldt County.
From Humboldt, yeah. There's my buddy Travis. My brother's out here, too. There's lots of street kids out here that are really good kids.
And we're talking with? What's your name?
Nikolai.
Thank you, Nikolai.
Thank you.
And, of course, the good bourgeois liberals of Santa Cruz say it's perfectly okay to fly a sign at night, provided you don't ask for money. You know, I mean, you know, just as long as you have your own house, your own income, and you're all well provided for, then you can have a discussion and encourage your representative with a polite letter to vote against the war in Iraq, and even though they're voting for the funding for the war in Iraq. It's kind of an interesting system. Anyway, phone line here... is 427-3772. In case you want to call in, I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, and we're going to turn now to a recap, for those of you who happened to listen to KSCO this morning, of what I said over the air, and actually a little bit before over the air, in response to questions about the story in the Santa Cruz Sentinel of yesterday morning, which had a sort of a front-page story about me at the district court, or the district court's decision, Judge White's decision, overturning or throwing out the case of a lawsuit against the Santa Cruz City Council for false arrest on two occasions, for arresting me at City Council, once for a mock Nazi salute, and the second time for whispering in the audience, walking across the in front of the dais. It's kind of hard to describe it. Parading, perhaps you called it, although I wasn't carrying a sign. I only did it once, twice, actually. And then the third thing was that I asked a question of the mayor when he warned me about whispering. He said, "This is your second warning." I turned to him and I said, "What was my first warning?" He said, "That's your third warning. You're out." I guess, I'm not much of a baseball player, but I got arrested because I decided, no, I have a right to be at a council meeting, even if the mayor chooses to concoct various reasons he doesn't want me there. That's not good practice for me to do, either for myself or for others, and so I didn't go. I was arrested and so forth. Anyway, the court threw that out. The Sentinel wrote about it, and I talked about it, and here's what I said.
How you doing?
I'm good, love. I'm not going to be playing nice, but I'm just doing it for the radio, okay?
Okay.
Okay. We specialize in quality repairs and replacement of your home's garage door and opener. Call me for a free estimate at 688-5892. That's A1 Overhead Door Company at
688-5892. This is AM 1080, KSCO.
You might say that I'm wild and crazy. That's the point of the fact.
Sorry about this. I thought there was actually a little bit of music here introducing the, as we wait for the chance to go on the air at 7:12
okay,
in the morning.
One of the things you can't say, but one person who's not afraid to say them, is a local activist. His name is Robert North, and he joins us on the KSCO Live Line this morning. Morning, Robert.
Morning, Rosemary.
Perhaps you would just lay down very succinctly for us why it is that we're talking to you this morning.
Oh, well, the Sentinel, some days after it happened, picked up the story that we are appealing a decision by Judge White, his second bad decision not to let our case go to a jury, where we're trying to get essentially the city council to stop repressing activists that they don't like, who are, you know, engaging in simple First Amendment activity at city council. And this has been a pattern of behavior over a period of years. I've been a victim of this. Others have as well. We're trying to get the city council to follow the First Amendment and the State Public Meetings Brown Act.
I appreciate that there are many things that you do in our local community that are well-intentioned, but would you not say that you and some others, but specifically I'm talking to you, have become an irritant and a time and money waster within the confines of the city council?
No, of course not.
I think a lot of people feel that way, Robert, and I'm not quite sure what it is by this particular matter where you gave a Nazi salute and you were escorted from the city council chambers. I'm not quite sure what you're trying to achieve and what is for the betterment of society by going forward with an appeal, which obviously takes lawyers, which obviously costs money.
Well, Rosemary, first of all, I wasn't escorted. I was arrested and held for 5 hours. And this isn't the first time they've done this. I think that if you can't attend a public meeting and you can't make a silent, fleeting, critical gesture, which is completely within the normal bounds of activity in Santa Cruz.
You have to say that making a Nazi salute is not within the normal bounds, Robert. Robert, considering what the ramifications are of a Nazi salute, you can't say that that's within normal bounds. Normal people don't go in and do that.
No, I can and I do. And when people are actively engaged in political discourse, when a council engages in a repressive action, it's not only normal, it is really important to draw the attention of the community to repressive behavior. And in city council, that's really difficult to do in a way that isn't disruptive, because if you say anything, that will be regarded as a disruption. But making a brief Nazi salute, or, you know, essentially it's a salute that says you're acting like a bunch of fascists. And frankly, that's something we need to say more frequently to the government when it acts that way.
And what was it in particular that the city council was doing that made you come up and give the Nazi salute?
Well, what happened there was this was during oral communications in the evening when city council allows the public to speak. And Mayor Krohn, it was Krohn at the time who was mayor, had specified in line that a number of people could speak. When the woman whom he had said could speak came up to speak, he cut off oral communications, and the reason he did this was he inaccurately judged the time, because he himself had interrupted oral communications and not subtracted that from the time. It's kind of a complicated procedural deal. But this is the only time the public has to speak on issues that aren't on the agenda. It's really important. It only happens once every 2 weeks and only for half an hour. And so what happened then was, when he then threatened to arrest this very diminutive woman who said, "Oh, you told me I could speak," and he kept saying, "Step away from the podium or you'll be arrested," I just reacted with, "Boy, he is acting like a fascist." And I raised my arm very briefly, turned to her to speak to her and kind of console her. Krohn went on with the meeting. There was no disruption. And then Fitzmaurice, who was sitting to his left, said, wait a minute, Mr. Norris has made a Nazi salute. And he is the one who disrupted the meeting, and that's the reason for the lawsuit. You can't allow council members to blame people in the audience for their own disruptions and throw them out if they just don't like the person in the audience, if they've decided that they want to apply a standard to eliminate that person from the discussion and from the meeting. So that's the reason. And I don't think the city should be spending this money either. I've agreed to go to talk to them. It's not really money that I'm looking for here. It is a change in the council rules that essentially protects the community. And frankly, also protects me. You know, I mean, I'm raising issues the city council doesn't want to address around civil rights for homeless people that they've been ignoring. And they're facing a much bigger lawsuit because they won't do what Los Angeles and San Diego have already done, which is to allow homeless people to sleep at night outside. That's a federal court ruling that the city attorney is insisting on ignoring. But, you know, we're not disrupting city council. We're not breaking windows. We're not even interrupting the process. They're interrupting their own process because they're sensitive about these things.
And so you're not looking for any remuneration of any kind?
Well, obviously, I mean, you know, when you go to federal court, you have to look for remuneration or they don't listen to your lawsuit.
Okay, so can I ask how much remuneration you're looking for?
I don't know if that's, you know, something I should talk about. I know where it's definitely a huge amount of attorney's fees. The amount I'm looking for is much less than the amount the attorneys are looking for. But, you know, this whole matter could have been resolved 5 years ago. And I've talked to Mayor Krohn about this. I said, look, let's sit down. I've talked to Tim Fitzmaurice, or tried to. I tried to talk to Kennedy about it. They are insistent on taking these matters to court, just like the Blue Lagoon case. They'd rather spend $1 million than give an apology and make a reasonable kind of accommodation.
Now, in those 5 years, Robert, and we're speaking with Robert North, community activist, in those 5 years, we've now had a change of guard at the city council.
Yeah, but not a change of policy.
So nothing's changed as far as you're concerned?
Well, actually, you know, you can make a Nazi salute now at city council, and that has happened. In fact, 2 weeks afterward, people made Nazi salutes because they were so outraged that council would say, in America, you can't say you're acting like a bunch of Nazis. I mean, you have to be able to say that to your government, or else you don't have a free government. So, you know, this actually was done 2 weeks later. I did it and others did it, and there was no response from the council because they realized they were out of line. Now, what's happened is you have the council, it just hasn't, well, Mayor Riley currently is engaging in things like she's doing other things. Like, she's not allowing people to make public comment on issues that are on the agenda because she doesn't want to hear a critical comment. I just filed a Brown Act complaint about that. And she does so not because she's a malicious or bad mayor, but because if public officials are not held in check by citizen action, it's mostly citizen action, and by the courts, when you can get the action by the courts, and you see this takes years and years and dedicated attorneys and costs a lot of money. I'm not paying anything because these attorneys are voluntary. They were outraged, and they took the case. And hats off to Kate Wells and David Beauvais for doing it. But I share with you your outrage that we should be spending taxpayer money on this. But I think it's an important enough issue that the council has to stop harassing people at city council, you know, or pay the price. And I think the citizenry should demand dump this case, don't spend another $100,000, because that's what they've spent, and deal with the issue.
Yeah. Well, I see where you're coming from, Robert, but I know I've heard the voices of other people, voices of dissent against what you're doing, but I just thought we'd put you on the radio and get your point of view out there, and I appreciate you joining us this morning.
Well, you know, Rosemary, I just think that if people understood the issue, they would understand it's not a case of grandstanding, it's not a case of trying to make a lot of money. It's a case of trying to get basic civil rights issues before the city council and the public, essentially before they cost the community much more than they would otherwise. Because, you know, San Diego's paying out a lot of money to nine homeless plaintiffs. Los Angeles, in the Jones decision, is doing the same because they wouldn't give their homeless people the right to legally sleep, not everywhere, but somewhere at night. And that has really been one of the main issues the city council refuses to consider. And frankly, a far more important issue than whether you or I can make a Nazi salute at city council, which we can. It's First Amendment protected. I'm sorry. It doesn't disrupt the council. And frankly, I come from a Jewish heritage, and I know what repression means. So it's, you know, it's not like it's some sort of anti-Semitic gesture. It's not.
All right, Robert. Thanks so much, Tim.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was me talking to Rosemary Chalmers of, is that her last name? I don't know. Of KSCO this morning, giving kind of an off-the-cuff analysis. It's every time the issue comes up, I kind of take a somewhat different spin on it. But the basic, I mean, I kind of a mixture of disappointment, but in a certain sense, I kind of recognize that judges can act, you know, particularly judges in a Republican Bushy era, particularly judges appointed by Reagan. I think White was appointed by Reagan, I'm not sure. But he definitely was a bad judge on this issue initially when he refused to even consider the issue. He initially dismissed it out of hand. We had to go all the way up to the court above him and get his ruling overruled, and then came back to him because we couldn't change our judge unless he showed prejudice. Now he showed prejudice, so it's likely that the case can be overturned. It's a case that I've talked about, frankly, probably too much on the air, and you can actually review it. If you want to go to the archives, you can archive city council, or you can, I call it the Heil Krohn case, because Christopher Krohn was the mayor. He got a little Heil because of his fascistic approach to dealing with oral communications in that particular point, and repressive. It was repressive. And, you know, the traditional way of signaling you find something to be repressive, if it really gets your goat, is, I mean, I guess you could scream about it, or you can just, you give a Nazi salute. It indicates you're acting like a fascist. That's my feeling. And I'm, as I've said throughout this interview, and as I say now, that's constitutionally protected. Now, whether the courts will regard it as constitutionally protected, I don't know. But I offered to go on KSCO and talk to the dissidents or dissenting people that didn't like it that Rosemary said that I defended, and I'd be happy to talk to them about it. We can debate it. We can discuss it. But I haven't heard back from Michael Zwirling, who really hasn't had me on a Saturday special in years since he doesn't like the name Free Radio Santa Cruz used on KSCO. When that comes up, he gets very upset. He thinks I'm trying to give free radio advertising, when in fact, I'm just, the last time I used it, I was mentioning I can't continue and finish this conversation, but I'll be talking about it on my show, you know, later in the week, in case you want to tune in. And that just was, you know, beyond the pale for him. And so no, the First Amendment goes only so far at KSCO. Of course, it only goes so far at Free Radio Santa Cruz as well. Everybody's got their own prejudices, I suppose. But no, I think we do a pretty good job here. At least on this show, I try to do a pretty good job. Though I admit I don't cover all the right wing ramifications of the Israeli issue, which has become a sore point at some points in the past on this day, in this particular, in this collective, and on this station, on my show, but not usually. So, the issue to me is simply, we have to not be afraid to speak our minds at City Council and to demand that City Council do what is right and do what is fair. And that, frankly, power, as Frederick Douglass says, concedes nothing without a demand. Never did, and it never will. And to want change without tumult is often like demanding, that there be rain without the thunder and lightning. I mean, you can get it sometimes, but a lot of times you aren't going to get it. And that's, unfortunately, what the Democrats in Congress are refusing to do, and that's why we have a continuing war in Iraq, because people are not willing to take the hard action that they need to take to stop the war. They need to, you need to stop business as usual, and it needs to be done, as thoroughly as possible. And at least you have to come online to, state, make it clear you're voting against the funding, and that's something that Representative Farr and Nancy Pelosi and all these Democrats that everybody was so happy to vote for in November are not doing. And we got to do it. We have to. The Vietnam War, if you look at it, didn't really end because of a polite debate. It tore the country apart, and it had to tear the country apart to end, because there were militarists in charge who believed in imposing U.S. imperial will on Vietnam, and actually, it was the Vietnamese who stopped the war. They won. And that's what's going to happen in Iraq, too. We have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Robert.
Hey, Madison. What's new? Hello?
Robert.
Madison. Are you there?
We can't hear you.
You can't hear me. What about now?
Mrs. Bush is homeless.
Who?
At the hotel.
Who is homeless?
I'll be back.
Madison is often puzzling and sometimes sounds absolutely incomprehensible. Man, I hope people can hear me. Let me know someone can call in at 427-3772 as some kind of a test here to see if you can actually hear me and what I'm saying. That would be nice if people could hear me. I hope they are hearing me. A couple of things are happening. I got a message just before about 5:30 or 5:45 before I came down to the studio. Fresno homeless evicted by Mike Rhodes. A very interesting story with a lot of photos. If you want to go to see what's cooking, you can go to indiebay.org/Central Valley and look at the story just posted, Fresno homeless evicted. We'll try again for the caller. Hi there, caller. Hello.
Robert, we can't hear you, but I'll keep talking for a minute.
You can't hear me.
Mrs. Bush is at the hotel. She's homeless. She's not in the White House. Mrs. Bush had to leave the hotel. We called and they connected us. We called where she is. The poor thing, my mom's, it's a tragedy. I'm like, love American tragedy style. The dude's been drinking for 6 weeks on the second floor. They locked him out onto the first floor so he'd clean up. And now he's down here with Alberto.
Madison, I can't understand what you're talking about, and you apparently can't hear me.
But Mrs. Bush is homeless.
So,
she's on the
so I'm going to have to cut you off, because first of all, I'm not sure what you're talking about. I can't really respond to you. Maybe people can try the other line, 469-3119, 469-3119. We'll see if it's a problem with Madison's phone, or is it a problem with something I'm doing here. I'm looking at the dials, and everything looks pretty much in order. Let's try again here. Hi, Free Radio.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Now I can't hear you. Boy, it's interesting. Wow. Well, other callers, I would encourage to call in and see if we can get somewhere with this. Hello. Boy, you can't win here. Anyway, Fresno homeless evicted. The city of Fresno forced homeless people to move from an encampment on Olive and West Avenue just west of Reading Park today. Or is it Roding Park? I'm not sure. Instead of taking and immediately destroying homeless property, they put their things in a large container and hauled it off to a city-owned warehouse in downtown Fresno. The photo below was taken shortly before the cleanup began. There's a picture of some interesting-looking kind of makeshift pup tents. We have a caller on, let's see, which line is a caller on? I got caller on both lines. Let's try the 427 line. Hi, you're on Free Radio, I hope. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Can you hear me? Hello? Oh, dear. I think we're having phone problems. You know, let me try it this way. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Okay, we're going to try to do this in a rather primitive way. Because for some reason, there's no connection to the board. I had a similar problem last Sunday when I was on the air. What's your name, caller? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to hold the earphone up to the mic, so speak loudly when you have something to say. And the other caller is calling in on 469-3119. You're going to have to wait because we have to deal with... What's your name, caller? You're John. And, John, I guess I'm going to have a dialogue with you here as best I can. You want to make a statement first? You got a brief question? Hang on. Let me put you on here. Speak again. Go ahead. Let me respond to that, and I'm not even sure if people are hearing you because it sounds awfully low on the. And maybe people are. Maybe people can call in and let me know if you were actually heard. As I said, I think the Iraqis are going to win this one. You know, they're the people who are going to throw out the U.S. And you know, because frankly, we are part of an imperial power at the moment. And a lot of us want to, a lot of us want to stop that in a certain sense. But do we want to give up our gasoline, our cars, our homes, our cheap energy, our cheap dollars? I don't know. And let me see if we actually heard you. Why don't you consider calling back? I'm going to try to take another caller and see if they're actually, if your voice got out there. And thank you for calling in. All right. So I'd say try and. Let me know if actually that call got out. I'm going to pick up the phone here. Hi, you're on Free Radio, but nobody can hear you yet. Hello?
What?
Can you hear me? Okay, well, thank you. All righty. Well, it looks like the phones are fucked, folks. I apologize, and I can convey your questions and I can answer them, but apparently people can't hear you. So let's see here. Hi there. You're not on Free Radio, but you could be. You can hear me, of course. You can hear me, but I can't. You can hear me, of course, but I won't be able to hear you. So if you want to make. You don't have to talk loud. You can just talk normally, but I will be able. Wait a minute. You're not going to be able to hear me in a moment, but make your statement and then I'll respond to it. Go ahead.
My number was number one, but I was only six and my brother was 18, September 14th. So I have talk about wake up. But Laura Bishop, Robert, is homeless. She's in the hotel on Connecticut Avenue. Swear to God, we called it. And I'm having a reception. An open studio for 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on Maple. We actually got it back to Santa Cruz, and we want to start having some gracious frisbee throwing events. Oh, you can come to Maple and throw your frisbee anytime you want.
Now, will there be food provided for this occasion? What I'm doing, by the way, for those Hang on. For those who are listening, people can't hear you yet because I haven't put you on yet. But I'm going to have to do this manually. I'm going to have to manually put you on and make a statement. Then I take you off and I answer you so you can hear me. It's a bizarre process. Now, my question for you is, will there be free food? Will people be able to sleep in your backyard? And will you stop your endless paranoia about the drug war? Go ahead.
First of all, Mrs. Bush is homeless. She's in a hotel on Connecticut because George has been drinking for 6 weeks. And we called, and they connected us. We verified it, the poor thing. So everyone send her a letter and relate to her on the homeless issue. And the daughters, they're all over there. And now I guess Bush is at Alberto's. He's with his girlfriend up in the woods in Scotts Valley. So go on up there and protest. And Alberto and them, they come down to the political section that Ryan has.
You know, this sounds kind of wing-nutty to me, Madison. Well, if it's true, you know, it's okay. If you have actual... So you're... Wait a minute. You're suggesting that the president has come to Scotts Valley? Okay, well, hey, I expect you to get photos and documentation. Otherwise, I'm treating this as a crank call. You take care of Madison. And sometimes I do treat Madison as a crank caller. And other times she's got great stuff to say, and she just have her art stuff happening this weekend. She's on Maple Street between Cedar and Center, I believe, in case you want to check her out. If it's public, it'll be probably pretty visible if she lives there. Anyway, get back to the Fresno homeless being evicted. City of Fresno evicted a group of homeless people living on a sidewalk across from Reading Park today. Now, the reason this is significant is that Mike Rhodes, who's an activist, a journalist, peace and justice activist, has also taken a recent interest in homeless issues and was part of the homelessness marathon in Fresno, which Becky Johnson and I went to and spent some time at. And you've heard some of it on free radio, and you can actually check it out on computer and download the homelessness marathon. It actually had some impact. The mayor felt sufficiently concerned. He came to speak at the homelessness marathon's other council members. And that was because of a court decision that Rhodes and others were able to get attorneys to secure with the documentation they provided with their photographs that homeless property, as it is in Santa Cruz, was being destroyed wantonly, routinely, maliciously, or even methodically. Maybe it wasn't even malicious. Maybe it was sort of in a, you know, trudging bureaucratic manner, not with any kind of malice, which is kind of even more spooky in a way. And so they got the Kincaid decision, which I've talked about on the air, which said you can't destroy homeless property. You can only store it. I mean, you can store it for a period of time, and then if it isn't claimed, then you can destroy it later. But the real issue for me is whether the city of Fresno, like Los Angeles, like San Diego, and like Richmond, are going to try to act to implement the Jones decision of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the Ninth Federal Court, which they can, and which came down last April, which says you can't arrest homeless people at night, in Los Angeles at least, unless they are given a legal place to sleep or unless there's adequate shelter. Actually, since there isn't adequate shelter, you can't arrest them, period. They've enjoined the police from doing that. And the city in L.A., the city of L.A. and the ACLU advocates who are taking the lawsuit and other legal groups are going round and round about a settlement, and the police are, of course, using other laws to harass the homeless big time and reducing the homeless population through parole checks and ID checks and drug laws and all kinds of nasty shit. But the sleeping ban has been thrown out, and in San Diego about 4 or 5 days ago, and I think I may have read this story on the air. Actually, it wasn't 4 or 5 days ago, it was longer. There was a case where I must have read this. A woman's signature makes sleeping on the streets legal. Maureen McGee writes in the San Diego Union Tribune about how the nine plaintiffs down there signed a final settlement, at least one of them didn't, and that was sufficient to seal it, that stops the San Diego police. There's an agreement not to arrest homeless people at night because they have no legal place to go. Now, doesn't this sound a little familiar? I mean, haven't you heard this kind of... Doesn't this sound a little... Something closer to home might also be... Does it kind of ring a bell in your mind? Well, yes. It does in my mind anyway, because here in Santa Cruz, we have the same situation. We have 1,500 to 2,000 homeless in the city tonight. And I guess Armory is... I believe it's still open. I'm not sure. But After mid-month, I don't think it will be, and that means, well, even when it's open, there's less space for less than 160 people. And we're talking about floor space, kind of nasty, unpleasant, crowded conditions at best, and conditions that are unavailable to a significant percentage of people just from the get-go and aren't available to the overwhelming majority of people because there's no room. And that's actually been admitted by Ken Cole, the Homeless Service Center, the executive director there, who runs that emergency shelter program, the only one that we have, even though he plays cagey with it at different points, saying there are more beds of a certain kind, but he acknowledges freely that there's nowhere near enough beds. So for homeless people, to arrest them for sleeping here in Santa Cruz, as we do, there are 60 citations issued a month, some of which definitely become arrests when they turn into warrants. I thought that warrants were not being arrested anymore, but that's not true. They're arresting people on these infraction warrants still, it seems, or at least that seems to be the reports I'm getting from the street. Although it's not entirely clear what exactly is happening. We thought that the procedure of arresting people for infractions has been essentially instead farmed out to a collection agency, which doesn't arrest, it just destroys your credit, which is a fine way, of course, to assist homeless people in getting back into homeless situations. Give them a ticket for sleeping, then give them a ticket for failing to appear in court. Talked to Craig Canada a couple days ago. He's a homeless advocate who's been in the studio before. He's gotten two of those tickets and failures to appear, each one costing now $540, which, of course, he couldn't even think of paying. So we have a sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, and we have in Fresno, apparently, they're cleaning up this encampment, which is in the nature of getting rid of people who need a place to live, who have no place to go, who have no place to sleep. And in Fresno, advocates sort of charged with success because they got a federal court to rule you cannot destroy people's property, at least, now are trying to document that it seems that people's property are now being seized and taken away without allowing people an opportunity on any kind of alternate shelter. Although that's not specifically required by the Kincaid decision, it is required by the Jones decision of Los Angeles. So we'll see what happens with that. We have a caller. Hi there, you're about to be on Free Radio. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'll think about that, Madison. Madison wants me to talk about the mortgage situation, but I'm talking about Fresno, which is huge to me, because in Fresno they're doing something about people's civil rights who are outside, and that's what I'm interested in at the moment. And also, you know, callers can talk about this once we get their phones actually working better, and I don't know why we're having this problem, but hey, we are. Anyway, the city of Fresno evicted a group of homeless people living on a sidewalk across from Reading Park today. Notices went up a week ago that a cleanup would take place on Thursday, April 5th. Dee, a homeless woman at the encampment, upon learning about the cleanup, said, "But where are we supposed to go?" Dee and other homeless residents in the encampment said the police came by several times yesterday and reminded them to get out. Dave, not his real name, said the police came by about every hour last night, shining their spotlights into his tent. Dave said he was told by Officer Oliver Baines that if homeless people were not gone by 8 a.m. today, they would be arrested. But by 8:30 a.m., everything was calm. There was not a cop in sight, and most of the residents were starting to pack up their things. By 9 a.m., the city started rolling in their equipment. The police in unmarked cars were the first to arrive, followed by squad cars, cleanup crews from the sanitation department, garbage trucks, city trucks with high-pressure water guns, and more police. The city crews outnumbered the homeless 2-1. Seeing the city was serious in their effort to evict the residents and dismantle the encampment, the pace of moving tents, clothing, and other property picked up. But by a little after 9 a.m., most of the homeless had moved their property to a church half a mile away, where they were told they could stay for a few days. The city of Fresno is restrained from taking and immediately destroying homeless people's property because of a lawsuit that was filed late last year. The federal judge in that case has issued a temporary restraining order, and if the city were to take and immediately destroy homeless people's property, they would be in contempt of court. The new policy, which they unveiled today, is to take and store homeless people's property. Property owners have 90 days to reclaim their possessions, which they do not, by the way, in Santa Cruz. And there's no such procedure for storing property. At least that hasn't been happening, according to Scott Lang, who was the chief ranger about a month and a half ago before the new guard came in.
City Council has voted in a huge new infusion of repressive funding for Parks and Rec, which includes three new rangers and, I guess, connections with four CSOs, community service officers, and go around and, you know, help intimidate people out in the wilds who are trying to survive, trying to shelter themselves, poor people who are doing that. Let's see here. Fresno police officer Bruce Hartman told me at about 9:30 a.m. that they believed the property remaining on the sidewalk was trash. He said a homeless woman told him he could begin the cleanup. I told him that she does not speak for all homeless people, and how does he know that someone who is not here right now didn't leave something he or she considers valuable on the sidewalk? The argument left the police and city sanitation department in somewhat of a momentary dilemma. They soon got over it. Philip Withers, the head of the sanitation department in Fresno, directed his crew to begin the cleanup operation. The directions given by Withers seem somewhat vague and ambiguous, leaving a great deal of discretion to the cleanup crew, who were dressed in bright orange jumpsuits, a face mask, and breathing filter. The cleanup crew seemed to do a basically good job of putting anything with obvious value in a storage container and the random plastic bags, pallets, and old food in the back of the garbage truck. However, I did notice an American flag that was thrown on the garbage truck, as well as some clothes and blankets. After everything was removed from the sidewalk, the city graffiti abatement truck rolled up and hosed down the area with a high-pressure hose. While things were finishing up at West and Olive Avenue, a homeless man on a bicycle told Alfonso Williams that the police were at his encampment about a block away. When he arrived, Al was told by Officer Hartman that he would have to leave. Al and his wife Sherry lived beside a building that was owned by the Chevron station next door. Al said he had received permission from the manager to stay there. Hartman said he had a signed complaint from several businesses and demanded that he leave today. Al negotiated for another day, and Hartman, big-hearted guy that he is, agreed. Afterwards, Al told me that Officer Hartman had taken the letter of complaint to the manager of the Chevron station on the Taco Bell and asked him to sign it. I've always gotten along fine with the guy at the Chevron station, Al said. It doesn't make any sense. Where are we supposed to go? I asked Captain Dave Bellomney, the new commander of the Southwest Police Division, where these homeless people were supposed to go. He pointed in the direction of downtown Fresno and said the homeless should go to the rescue mission in Poverello House. The city of Fresno estimates that there are over 8,000 homeless people in Fresno. The rescue mission has about 120 beds for men only, and the Poverello House has beds for about 50 people in tool sheds they have set up in the, quote, Village of Hope. The tool sheds have no heating or cooling. A lot of homeless people have told me they would not keep their dog in one of those tool sheds. The homeless people at the West and Olive encampment have been displaced. They will no longer be visible to those who come to play tennis right across the street at Redding Park. The problem with the city of Fresno's new policy on the homeless, according to homeless advocate Brian Apper with the Catholic Worker, is that it does not provide them with any place to go where they can be safe. They simply chase them from one place to another. And this is from indiebay.org/Central Valley, a story by Michael Rhodes. A lot of good photographs here showing people being... the city workers doing the cleanup. That's what we need here in Santa Cruz for volunteers who want to document what the police and Parks and Rec and labor-ready crews are doing to homeless people. Please give a call to the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom at 423-4833. 423-4833. And that will be cool if you do. Now... back to the street interviews, and then I'll come back myself with some more stories I've garnered here, which I think are worth passing on to you. If you got any questions or comments, you can make them. It's a somewhat more elaborate process. Feel free to call in. Don't be discouraged. If you got something you want to say, please say it. I also want to make a couple of announcements. There's going to be a Know Your Rights seminar on Sunday, April 8th, at the corner of Pacific and Cooper. This is the first such seminar that's being actually done on Pacific Avenue. Last time it happened, it was in the park across from the Farmer's Market, and then before that, it was in Loudon Nelson Park. And this is by two great activists, Rico Thunder, also known as Wes Modes, and Jason, they role play. They play the police officer coming up to you. They show you what responses to do and not to do in order not to be incriminated in a crime or alternately lose your right to be in a public space. And I'm hoping that they're not going to have time to really incorporate what I hope they would do, which is a way to sort of hold your ground when a police officer comes up to you and demands you move along. And it's a kind of a very, there's a variety of tactics that can be used. And I've given kind of informal seminars myself on the subject. I've talked about it on the air. There is, of course, a crackdown still going on downtown where people are being driven away, where the district attorney is colluding with an unauthorized subcommittee of the Santa Cruz City Council, run apparently, well, I don't know who runs it, but on it is Lynn Robinson, vice mayor, and Bookshop Santa Cruz co-owner Ryan Coonerty, and Cynthia Matthews, a downtown Planned Parenthood union buster, who's been on the council for a long time. So this subcommittee decided to go to the police department and get a crackdown, along with, no doubt, certain neighborhood groups, and they've been getting it. And what we've got is people being grilled up and down Pacific Avenue. The first thing to remember is you don't have to talk to the police. You really don't. You can politely say, you know, I don't want to talk to you. I don't approve of what's going on downtown, and I prefer you leave me alone. If you think I'm committing a crime, tell me what it is, and I will, you know, maybe I'm unaware of what it is. If you, if you have to, write me a ticket. And, of course, that's a hard thing for people to say because they don't want to have to go to court with these tickets. But really, it's also a matter of losing your dignity and losing your rights and losing your sense of security and self-respect. And it's a matter of standing up for each other, too, against this kind of thing. And it's interesting. I mean, some people break when this happens. One guy attacked a police officer. His name is Ronald. What the heck was his name? It became a big deal. Police officer assaulted. Other people call out for help when a couple was, you know, arrested for marijuana possession, and then they added the charge of having a phony $20 bill, $5 bill. I don't know. I got the story from three of the companions of this couple who said they were just a rainbow couple who were in town, and they were being harassed by the police. And it's really important that people stand together against this, because it is going to be it's a perennial problem. People in positions of power cater to those who are, you know, conservative residents and merchants, and they don't give a fig or a damn for the rights of poor people. Frankly, usually people of color, unless it's really brought up, or disabled or elderly people, unless, of course, they are appropriately used as kind of totems and, you know, used as a sort of a rallying cry to repress and add more police behavior, more police power downtown. At least that's been my observation. You don't have equality and parity between groups of people. There's no recognition that the downtown area is a community gathering space and not the commercial preserve of the businesses. That's not what it is. It's a community center, and that's what we need to reclaim downtown. So let's do a little more. You know what I've got here? This actually might be of interest to some of you who are still interested in the lawsuit. The article that the Santa Cruz Sentinel did about Judge White's dismissing of my lawsuit against the city council, which is now being appealed and will go to a higher court, happened after an interview. And I recorded that interview, and I think you might find it amusing to listen to it. And what happened here was I went into the offices of the Sentinel at the request of reporter Shanna McCord, who I call Shanna Banana because she's very slippery. Friendly person. I like her personally, but she's a horrible reporter. I mean, she really, really sucks. I mean, she parrots and regurgitates police press releases and gives city council members who are in favor of repression and, you know, which are all dressed up in nice new outfits with smiles on the all over the uniforms, like Mike Rodkin. And then it gives no time at all to critics, whether the critics are attorneys or whether the critics are homeless service providers or the critics are homeless advocates like me. Just very biased reporting. And I think some of it's sloppy. Some of it's because she's just not really that interested. I don't know what it is, but I know that I've seen her operate long enough that she's not good. And it's too bad because she's a sweet person. She's a nice individual. She's friendly, and I like her, you know. But I can't stand her reporting, and I also find her disingenuous and kind of deceptive in the way she proceeds. She pretends to be writing down what you're saying avidly and listening to you, but then you look at the story and nothing appears as to what you said, and the quotes are mangled, and she has her own spin on things, and there's a lot more time given to those who are critical of the situation or have a different slant on it, if we're talking about homeless civil rights issues or we're talking about council abuse. So this story was no exception. Anyway, Shanna and a photographer, Dan, I think it's Coiro, that's his name, not sure, we took a hike over to city council where they wanted to take a picture of me, and they were going to coax me into making a Nazi salute, and you're going to hear all this this discussion. And hopefully it'll be entertaining and maybe educational.
And here is KGO News.
Of course, I have to find the right tape first. And I will, by cracky. Don't give up on me. Here we go. Of course, then I have to play it at the right speed, so hang in there.
We're here in the infamous Sentinel building. I'm about to be interviewed by that world...
By the way.
Yes, I understand it's for sale. We have longtime photographer here and the infamous... short-timer reporter who actually gets all the glory, but I'm not quite sure what the salary differential is.
Not much, actually.
Shanna McCord. Well, some people like photos. Mm-hmm. I believe that one. I got a bridge.
Oh. Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So,
okay, well, let's step out into
sure.
the...
You have a deadline that's actually been moved up because the Sentinel offices are moving, right?
Well, because they're shutting down our press, sorry.
Yeah.
Dan, when you're ready, just come get us. Oh, you want to go now?
Photos first? Is that the difference?
Yeah.
Dan's last name is what?
Coiro.
Embarrassing.
Cordial Coiro.
Or Coy Coiro.
Coy Coiro, yeah.
Right. Right. Well, now we know exactly who he is, but do we know truly who he is? That's going to be another question.
Do we want to know?
I can't answer that question.
Yeah.
So we're walking down the stairs toward the emergency exit, but this is no emergency. This is business as usual. That's the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
This is business.
So your deadlines, which used to be, what, 4 or 5, are now 2 o'clock?
Well, we have to get our stories in, we have to start writing them by early afternoon.
Is it because they're carried over the hill by horse, or what's
the... by a horse and buggy.
Okay.
They're shipped electronically, but it's printed in San Jose, so we have less control over what happens. And it's got to be printed earlier.
I see. So this is your excuse when the story comes out, mangled, mashed.
There you go.
And,
Yeah.
This is the way the corporate gets their hands on our stories and manipulates
them. This is how the Wall Street Journal owners manipulate the situation.
Except we're not owned by the Wall Street Journal.
No, but you're both owned by the same corporation. True?
No, not anymore.
No, we're sold.
Have you been paying attention to all the sales?
I haven't followed the second and most recent sale.
Owned by the
Media News Group, owned by Dean Singleton.
And he owns the Mercury, the Herald, the Contra Costa Times, the Oakland Tribune.
His flagship paper, though, is the Denver Post.
Have you read the Denver? I think I read it occasionally. I see an occasional article, but...
From Denver?
Yeah, he's a big supporter of lefties, right? This guy who's taken over the Sentinel?
Probably.
Probably not, actually. So where are we walking? Is this a sort
City Hall.
City Hall. Oh, dear. Well, you really need the real criminals, Mayors Kennedy, Fitzmaurice, and Crone here. I mean, I think it would feel incomplete without them.
You know what kills me about that, about Fitzmaurice being the one to
to say that it was disruptive is I remember when he was screaming through a bullhorn in front of the Sentinel, screaming, "This paper's full of lies. There's that longtime photographer, Bill Lovejoy. He lies."
One of the few occasions I might actually have been on the same team with Tim Fitzmaurice.
Oh, come on now.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it was the bus strike, the metro strike.
And what was the specific lie that Tim was objecting to?
He just thought we were giving coverage
to
the UCSC young Republicans who were demonstrating against.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Whereas no such thing ever happened, right?
Never.
No. Certainly not. Okay.
All right.
Are you going to let Ms. Cook let us in, where I can sort of sprawl over the table in a disruptive manner?
She won't let us. Remember.
But she may have changed her tune. Offer her a photo op.
I mean, I'll ask, but they don't do that unless it's you have to be a city official or during a public meeting. They don't just open the council chambers for anyone. There's not a
for longtime photographer Dan Cordial.
Yeah, what about longtime? Yeah, and this is a positive story about how the city council has triumphed, vanquished gadflies and disruptors who are wasting public time and money, right?
Right, right.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So
let's do talk about your legal loss.
Well, this case involved essentially homeless. The city's council refusal to deal with homeless issues, which has been, you know, standard for years. They have a token homeless program, and then they have a series of anti-homeless laws, which criminalize 95% of the homeless every night. And that's been one of the main issues that, you know.
But this case was about you giving the Nazi salute when it was not your opportunity to speak in the public setting, oral communications, or addressing a specific item on the agenda. And so Fitzmaurice called you out saying that was disruptive, you should be dismissed, or saying that was disruptive and asking you to leave the meeting, which you refused to leave.
Actually, this case was about Fitzmaurice, in a typical fashion, disrupting his own meeting in order to intimidate members of the public who were in no way disruptive themselves. I didn't interrupt the meeting. The mayor didn't even notice a salute that has been made in the past from the floor of the council, which indicates, you know, you guys are acting like a bunch of fascists on homeless issues. And it does so in a fashion that's brief, succinct, and in no way interrupts council business. And that's why we're appealing this to the Ninth again. And it's going to come back, and there will be a trial. You know, and hopefully the council will have to address these issues and stop harassing homeless people.
Well, how does that play into this at all? How I've read the court decision was that there was an oral communication, there was time for the public to speak, that ended, they cut someone off, they told a woman that her time was up, and she had to leave the podium, and then your response to that was to raise up your arm, and Fitzmaurice saw it. Crone didn't even see it. Fitzmaurice saw it, took offense, thought it was disruptive.
Why?
Made a point of order.
You see, in circumstances in the council, and you've been on the council many a time, on non-homeless issues, let's get on the shade here. On issues where the council is in agreement with the audience, gestures from the audience, signs, whatever, don't pose a problem. Now, that afternoon, there actually had been a homeless issue on the agenda where the council corrected one of its mistakes after 2.5-3 months. They had they'd screwed up against our advice, and then they were going back to correct it, which essentially put the situation back to the status quo. And as you know, every year we got 40 homeless people die at a rate about 4 to 10 times the population. And, I mean, this is all really sort of undisputed in terms of how people regard this situation. Service providers give us this information. So when you say Fitzmaurice took an action toward me, he was engaging in a kind of behavior that was selective, it was intimidating, it was unnecessary. It's cost the city probably $100,000 in attorney's fees.
Yeah, that's how much they said they spent.
You know, and it's not over yet. Two months before this, I offered to Mayor Crone, let's sit down and work this out. This kind of gesture from the side is
a gesture that has nothing to do with Nazism. It simply says, we think you're acting like a bunch of fascists. Mm-hmm. And it's well within the normal boundaries of Santa Cruz, discussion and debate. I mean, you're not saying, come outside, motherfucker! None of that is happening. And the point is that this kind of a gesture is not, it's not really a question of decorum in any absolute sense. It's a question of the kinds of issues the city council is allowing to have considered. For instance, in the second case, I don't know if you've probably read both cases, in the second case we had Kennedy having me arrested. In the midst of a protest outside, not inside, a quiet protest, we had asked Kennedy, who had canceled the evening session. This is a homeless protest. We were going to read the names of the homeless dead in there. That's why I keep emphasizing, it's not about Nazis, not about me. It's about the city council's refusal to address homeless issues and its determination that those who bring them up persistently be punished. And it has to be emphasized that I was never even charged by the district attorney with any charges in connection with this. And this is only the latest in a long series of mayoral actions that involve repression. For example, at one point, I had a sign up. Part of it said, that's a lie and that's the truth. And I kept turning the sign around, and I was over by the side of the room, depending on whether Fitzmaurice was telling the truth or lying about a particular issue. Mayor Riley said, that distracts me, even though I was off to the side. Uh-huh. And they insisted I leave the room. And another time, I did this from the side of the room. Uh-huh.
So you held a sign that said what on each side?
That's a lie, and that's true.
Uh-huh.
And, the point is that there's so little public comment allowed at city council. City council members can talk, as you know, indefinitely for as long as they wish. Whereas members of the public, even those who are favored, get usually at most 3 minutes. They have to talk before there's any meaningful discussion at council or meaningful input from the staff. It varies, actually, there. And often it's a time in the afternoon when most people can't attend. They're working people. But since I don't think any of this is going to go into the story, let's talk about what you want in the story.
Well, I want to know, they say that gesture was disruptive. It wasn't the content. They say if you want to stand up during oral communications and give them the Nazi sign for 3 minutes, that First Amendment is protected. That speech is protected.
That is something John Barisoni made up when the case went to court. Because if you'll go back to the record a half year before, Fitzmaurice warned me, any attempt to make a Nazi sign at city council is going to be regarded as disruption. Any use of the word Führer or flunky will be considered disruption at oral communications, because that's where I was warned in that case. So what happened was, once I did this and they made this screwy arrest, which was abusive and pointless, and it was really a way of saying, we got the power, you do what we want.
Right.
And what impressed me is it intimidates other people. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel very good about it either.
You're saying, though, that you've done this Nazi sign many times prior to this arrest.
I've done it at least several times prior.
Right, and that there was never a problem until it became a disruptive part of the meeting.
But it wasn't disruptive. See, that's the point. They had to cook up. The only person that disrupted was Tim Fitzmaurice, because the meeting was proceeding smoothly. If you listen to the tape, Mayor Crone had moved on to the next order of business. Mm-hmm. And then as Kennedy interrupted three speakers to claim disruption in the case that happened 2 years later in the homeless issue, because, again, he didn't want the homeless provided an opportunity for oral communication when there was a large demonstration here. We actually had some lefties, Michael Parenti, and some other activists who were famous writers, would come down in 2004.
Where's the robe? We thought you were going to be in
there. Yeah, what the hell's going on here? I'm going to see the row.
My mistake in doing the Nazi salute before you. I see that now. But nonetheless, the issue is not a Nazi salute. The issue is whether any particular action of the city council is truly disruptive, and who is doing the disrupting. Is it the city council that is saying, interrupting the process in order to single out an individual and stop the meeting and, in essence, intimidate the person? And disruption, what is a disruption? A disruption is when you pause, you force the meeting to stop or recess. Fitzmaurice has shown in the past that he has a particular obsession with certain rules of decorum.
Who does?
Tim Fitzmaurice, or had. He's no longer our mayor, as you know. And often these issues come up because in the homeless situation, there's no provision for any kind of agenda item. You don't have a process here like in Santa Monica where you can actually get an item on the agenda. The best you can do is circulate a petition and get 3,900 people to sign an initiative.
Do you need other photos?
No, I need a shadow.
Oh, okay.
Don't shoot me.
let's get the...
I want to see you do what you were doing. And you can have any kind of look on your face, like, and definitely hold your tape recorder.
Well, what I would like to do is just... I mean, I don't mind my face appearing. I don't want... This isn't really an issue about a Nazi salute.
Yeah, but if that's what they say, it is.
Well, you know, they say there was a disruption happening because of two other people, which I don't think is true either. With Tomasi, yes. Tomasi is perennially disruptive. He leaves, and that's it.
Really?
You know, he is. I mean, just that's their kind of cover for anything else. They say, look how tolerant we are. We're very nice to Tomasi. And if we didn't stop these people, they'd all be Tomasis all over the place.
Right.
Which isn't true. I mean, I would urge you as an objective reporter to, you know, I mean, you've been around. You've seen that I don't stop the meeting for 5 minutes at a time. I mean, you have to ask yourself, have I ever been disruptive in any meaningful, common sense use of the word at City Council?
I would say that you have a tendency to be combative.
But not disruptive.
Disruptive.
Well, combative is a way that you talk to people,
right.
which is permitted.
Right.
Disruptive is when you stop the process.
Right.
If I, you know.
Let's get the photo though. We'll continue the conversation.
You
want to just do that?
Like that?
To show people what some people don't even know what the Nazi salute is.
If you want to show how stupid, and it's a fascist salute,
right?
Because the Italians did that too.
Right, it started with the fascists.
I wouldn't equate it with Nazis.
How about this?
Wait. Okay. Right here.
So what is that then? Is that what you did?
Okay. You know. Well, that's not what you were doing.
We wanted to see what you were actually doing.
What's happening here is I'm avoiding giving a Nazi salute as the frontispiece to a story, because I didn't think it's a good idea.
My problem is that when people see this story in the paper, their response is going to be, oh, he wants to go make a Nazi salute at City Council. And that wasn't the point at all.
That was something that you've done in the past and something that they found upsetting.
Well, what they found upsetting, Tim found upsetting that I didn't follow a rule that he had stated. It could have been any number of rules. He had a rule that you couldn't come up and put a tape recorder at the mic. He had another rule that you can't use the word Führer or flunky. He had another rule that you couldn't sit in the front row unless you were this was a short-lived rule, but unless you were a reporter or a guest.
Uh-huh.
He had a variety of rules, and you could no longer stand behind the dais and take pictures, as Dan probably remembers, used to be the case. People were videoing from behind the dais and so forth. That was no longer permitted once Tim came in. I mean, there was a whole series of things that happened.
I think it's just important to show people, like, this is the sign you were making as just an example.
Well, I mean, everybody, frankly, every educated person knows what a Nazi salute is, and most uneducated people do, too. It's
fascist.
It's a part of fascist, thank you. Fascist salute, you know.
Well, it's referred to commonly, hi, Greg, as the Nazi salute.
It is. But again, my point to you is that this... It was not found. First of all, the problem is when you do this Nazi salute stuff, it really was a case of a mayor saying, "I don't want to hear about homeless issues from this homeless advocate. I don't want him bringing up these issues on the consent agenda when they seem to me peripheral, although they're not in the sense in which I bring them up. I'm saying you could spend this money instead on that and so forth."
It sounds like you're not. You've made this salute in the past.
Openly.
But you don't want to do it now. It's like you don't want to acknowledge that that's...
Oh, I mean, it certainly happened, and it's on tape. I mean, if you want to get a copy of the Nazi salute, you can pull it off the video.
Right.
And the video is available. We stream the video online.
Do you think it's absurd that they...
Yes.
Okay.
But the problem...
I'm trying to think of what the word to say is. Like
opportunity to...
Yeah, to show the salute and make a face gesture saying that you think it's absurd.
But unfortunately, that's a hard message to convey as an image. In other words, if I were to make a Nazi salute and make a grotesque gesture, I think it would make me look like an idiot rather than like a person who was, you know, why would one spend 5 years, you know, fighting this damn thing? And what I'm fighting isn't the Nazi salute.
Uh-huh.
I'm fighting the policy of repression at City Council. And that continued, for example, I've turned in a Brown Act complaint, which I sent to you.
Right, I got that.
Which has to do with
the city council is just casually cutting debate on, for example, Officer Howes got a presentation, and we wanted to talk on it for 3 minutes.
I know.
Right?
I know,
you got the whole thing.
Wait, back to talk.
Going back. But anyway, it's continuing.
Let's
it's a continuing
the photo.
Procedure.
Let's get the photo.
Okay, do your thing with the peace sign.
Okay. I'll try to think of something a little more colorful for you, because I know you want us. Let me think of something here.
But I mean, if that's, you know, like this, that's good.
But no, Robert!
You know,
okay, like this.
You know what? This
How's this?
Reminds me
How's
of,
this?
No, this reminds me of
people that go out to public protests with signs and disrupt public traffic and then yell at me not to take their photo. They're in a public place.
I would have had
it's like
no,
they don't
have,
take responsibility for
but
what they're
Dan,
doing.
Dan, I would have no objection to your taking my photo at the time and dealing with the issue. And the problem now is you are about to do a story where the city council is going to say, see, we got this disruptive scumbag just where we want him. You know, look what he's doing. He's making this outrageous gesture at city council. You know,
okay, do it straight at me.
I think I held out my hand with a thumb
like
up.
That. No, but move it off to the side a little bit. And you're looking at me.
No, you gotta put the arm straight.
Come on. What? I don't understand. I don't understand.
Well, I think
I don't understand. And I've had this argument with protesters.
A million.
I go, take responsibility for what you're doing. You know.
I don't mind taking responsibility. In fact, you'll see me do it at the next city council. You want to bring your camera? I'd be happy to do it there. You know,
call a special meeting. So, because
I mean, they won't even let you into the chambers here.
Yeah, we have a deadline in about an hour.
I mean, Dan, it's nothing. I'm not trying to frustrate you. I know how the Sentinel writers. I don't necessarily mean you, though. Frankly.
I'm sure I'm at the top of the list.
You know, I mean, your story gets spinned, and I think it does a disservice to what really happened. I mean, I think, you know, it's not pleasant to say to someone you're a bunch of fascists. I mean, that's a harsh thing to say.
Right.
And an ordinary family, right? Well, you are, because you're a dirty fascist with that white hair. You probably got relatives in Argentina or something like that.
Platinum blonde. It's
very nice. Yeah, very good. This is very good. It's got the sunglasses. Very nice. Is it?
Okay, that's as good as we're going to get out of this.
Well, you can always kind of clip it off, and maybe you can make it a little bit.
Yeah.
No, that would entail photoshopping, and we don't do that.
Hey, well, I appreciate that, Dan. I appreciate you coming out, and
I understand. I'm just trying to goad you into doing it.
Of course you are, and as you should. That's your job, Dan, to get the news out there, and no matter what it takes, in the most visual form possible, visceral. Thank you. Any comments for Free Radio before we leave this familial scene?
Familial scene. Dan gave you so much. I mean, Dan gave you at least a week's worth of shows.
Well, Dan is expressing himself candidly, as he usually does. So how long, you've been doing this for 27 years now?
28.
Oh, my.
I've been doing it right out of college since 73.
Your ideal job would be, where would you like to go next?
I think I'm at the end of my career.
Now, come on. You have a second career ahead of you. Now, let's not be... I mean, you're young, comparatively speaking. Look at Mike Rodkin. Probably be running for United States Senator next.
I don't think so.
No, I don't either, actually. Anyway, we've been... listening to the on-the-job working skills of... Say your name.
Oh, Shanna McCord.
And?
Dan Coiro.
Thank you. Thank you both.
And that was me talking to Sentinel people yesterday, or the day before, actually. I guess it came out on Wednesday, so it was the day before. It was on Tuesday. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. And call-in number here is still 427-3772. There's a People's Park anniversary coming up, for those of you who remember that park up in Berkeley. Unfortunately, The email I got doesn't say when it was or when it is, but I think it's this month. It's April during the year. For those who wonder what my criticism of Shannon McCord was, you should really go online. I give a lengthy critique of what she does and doesn't do, and you can read about it there. I'll mention it briefly, perhaps after this call. Hi, you're about to be on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Hey, Mike, I'm going to give you. I've actually just read your entire story aloud. This is Mike Rhodes in Fresno. Here has just called me. We have phone problems as usual, or actually not as usual, but today we do. And what we can do is we can put you on, but you, in order for you to hear me, I'll have to interrupt you, and they won't be able to hear you when I'm interrupting you. So right now, for instance, anything you say, they can't hear, but as soon as I stop talking and click you over, you will be able to be heard. But you should know that, you know, I did read the entire story you posted, so if you got more to add, we can... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great story with great photos. And again, I encourage people to go to indiemedia.org/Central Valley. I'll ask you a couple questions here. First of all, you can introduce yourself and say hi. Hang on. Say hi.
Mike Rhodes in Fresno, California. We had a pretty big day here today with the police rousting homeless people out of an encampment.
Can you hear me, Mike, or not?
Are you there?
Yeah, you can't really hear me, probably, unless I pull you off the air and talk to you right now. Can you hear me now? Yeah, but unfortunately, when I spoke before, you probably couldn't. So what I'm going to do is I'll ask you a question. I'll put you on the air. You're finding that homeless people are being forced to move. I read these different pretexts they use. Oh, go to Pavarello House, go to this mission, go to that mission. Move along. We're going to store your property. But in fact, I guess they've shown they can clear any area of homeless people that they want and, harass them from sleeping. Are you looking into the Jones decision from Los Angeles, which says they, at least in Los Angeles, and has been ratified also in San Diego, they can't arrest homeless people at night because that's cruel and unusual punishment? Go ahead.
You know, that's interesting you'd ask that. Jeremy Alderson, who does the homelessness marathon, just asked me the same question tonight. What about the Jones decision? Doesn't that apply here? And I did talk to our attorneys about that, and their take on it was that it didn't really apply here. Maybe they're wrong, but their legal opinion was that the Jones decision affected homeless people if they were being arrested or fined. In the situation we have here in Fresno, that wasn't really the case. I mean, actually, they did kind of somewhat threaten to arrest them, but I don't think that was a serious threat. They just were trying to scare them off. So what it really came down to is, does the city of Fresno have the ability to clean, sweep a sidewalk? I think the Jones decision only affects people if they're... it gives them a right to be there from like 9 at night till 6 in the morning or something. But then during the day, they have to, pack their tent up and move somewhere. But that wasn't the case here. This was a permanent encampment on a sidewalk right across from the largest park in town.
Now, did the permanent encampment return after the sweep?
Well, I was there till about 11:30 today. The city, there was just police all over. It looked like a military operation. Most of the homeless people I know just sort of, disappeared off into the distance. They didn't want to be hanging around there. Are they back there now? I don't know. I haven't gone back later this afternoon or this evening. My guess is, I know probably where they are. There's a church about a half a mile away that says that they can stay there for a few days. So they'll probably stay there a few days. Then they'll find someplace else and set up another encampment somewhere. The problem with the law here and the way the city is handling this is that there's just no legal place for people to go. There's probably at least 10,000 homeless people in Fresno. And there's beds for maybe 200 of them, 120 or 30 of them, which are for men only. And then the rest of them, practically the rest of them, are tool sheds, which have no heating and no cooling. And
we've actually talked about this. Whoops. Boy, I hope he calls back. I lost him. Mike, if you're listening on the air, call back and we'll continue the conversation. That's Mike Rhodes of Fresno, who's been both writing and distributing cameras to homeless people to photograph and keep a document what's going on with them, and you know, being in solidarity, confronting police, interviewing police, which is what needs to be done. The spotlight needs to be turned on this. And then there's the interesting information we just learned that attorneys there, and I got a similar kind of argument from Don Zimmerman, the local ACLU attorney, about a year ago when the Jones decision first appeared, and I raised it for Santa Cruz. I said, look, you got a pattern and practice of harassing homeless people. You know, why not get an injunction against it? And I got various caveats, various, reasons why not. Oh, well, because, you know, this case may be overturned. We should wait and see what happens in the courts. And actually, the case is still going. It's still being on hold because the city of Los Angeles says it wants to settle, and then the city council won't abide the settlement. They go back to the table. But what's happened in de facto is that this is currently precedent that that the Jones decision, in essence, it said, I don't think they have to actually be arresting people and convicting people. It simply has to be that there is inadequate shelter space and that they have a practice of doing so, and that the homeless people are at risk for that. That, in fact, was sort of an unusual part of this Jones decision. Usually, the cruel and unusual punishment part of the Constitution only applies once there's been a conviction. But there are cases where that's not true. So, for instance, in the case of laws that criminalize alcoholics, just the drinking of alcohol, or being a drug addict, that is not itself illegal. Because it's cruel and unusual punishment to have such a law even before a conviction happens. Let's try again here. Hi, I hope you're on Free Radio. Is that you, Mike? Hello? Anybody there?
Hey, Robert, it's me again. I don't know if you can hear me.
Oh, hang on a second.
Hear you.
I can hear you. Okay, now, you actually could hear me a moment ago? Okay, let's do it this way. Can you hear me now? Can you still hear me? Sounds like you couldn't hear me a moment ago. Okay, so we're going to do it like this. As before, I just lost you because of fumble wumble here. You talked to one or two attorneys. You were told that the cruel and unusual punishment provision doesn't apply if a person hasn't been arrested or convicted, is what you're saying. Hang on a second. Start again now.
Right. The attorneys that we're working with is the ACLU in Northern California. There's the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, Civil Liberties, and a private law firm up in the Bay Area, a big law firm. And they consult with each other on this. And that's the word I heard back from them, that they don't think that the Jones decision applies because the city of Fresno is not arresting or fining people for sleeping between those hours. They think that the Jones decision is very narrowly defined, and that's why it doesn't apply here.
It's true the Jones decision is narrowly defined, but it's also true that if the city has a policy of arresting homeless people at night, and I guess that's what you have to document, that are they generally leaving homeless people alone at night, or is there a policy of going after them? What's the situation with that?
I heard a lot of interesting stories today while I was, you know, hanging out between, you know, the sweeps they were doing and talking to the people that were living in that encampment. And some of the things, and I didn't put these things in the story, so it'd be good to tell you now, are some of the things that the police do there. The people were saying that the police come by in the middle of the night, like 2 or 3 at night, jam everybody out of their tents, get them to all line up in a row, hold them there for between 45 minutes and an hour, in a line. They don't let them leave. They run all their IDs through their database. And if anybody has any warrants or they're on parole or probation, they take them in. And they were saying that that just is a regular occurrence, that they come every week or so and do that to them. The other thing that they said that they did was that somebody came by on New Year's Eve and dropped off 10 cases of beer for the small encampment. There's probably 15 or 20 people that are there at the most. And about 2 hours later, the police arrived en masse to arrest people for being drunk and disorderly. It was like, you know, they just felt this was a setup because this just came out of the blue. They didn't know who dropped this beer off. The police were trying to get rid of them so that they come out there right after they were given all this beer, enough time to drink it on New Year's Eve, and then they come out and jam them as being drunk and disorderly, which actually they said, I don't know if it's true or not, they said they weren't, but that's the kind of things that are happening. They get set up, they get searched, and their ID run through the database for no cause. Other than that, the last couple of days, they've just been threatening to arrest them.
Have you got a couple things, Mike, and I'm running out of time, but let me ask you this. You can still hear me? First of all, there was before the Jones decision in L.A., there was a previous injunction which the ACLU got in Skid Row, which was renewed recently, which had to do with bogus stops of homeless people in Skid Row for loitering. And that, you know, and now I don't know if they're using a similar tactic in Fresno, but I guess that's my second question, which is there a have you had enough of a sort of a longer term view, or do you have sources in the homeless community that will enable you to get a sense of what's been happening over the course of the last year or two? In other words, and one thing you could do is you could do a Public Records Act request for code sections under which homeless people are normally stopped. You know, to see, I mean, you can determine by, you know, anecdotally what kind of codes they arrest people for when they do go after them for sleeping or for, you know, for lodging, or whether they use the lodging law, 647J, the state lodging law, anti-lodging law, whether they use some municipal code that, you know, hasn't turned up yet, or whether they use trespass laws, and then do a Public Records Act request, you know, and find out just how widespread that is. And if you can find a practice of that, even if it doesn't lead to convictions, if it's done, those constitute an arrest. Citations constitute an arrest. And, of course, police contacts constitute an arrest. Then the next thing that you consider doing is what we're going to be doing on Sunday, or actually some people are going to be doing. They'll be doing a forum on Know Your Rights, which advises homeless people that, you know, they don't have to talk to police officers. They don't have to leave a public area unless, you know, they're engaging in some criminal behavior. And then they don't have to leave. They can just say, arrest me. In other words, and that's a hard thing, of course, for a homeless person to do. I mean, you know, it's a everything is at risk when that happens. But your homeless population has been emboldened by court backing and also by the backing of people like yourself. What do you think of those two ideas?
Yeah, I think that's really good, Robert. I would appreciate it if you would send me, maybe by email, the citations that I could look for under a Public Records Act request. I have several Public Record Act requests in right now for that area, because one of the things that the police cited to the media was that they had all these complaints that were going on there, that, you know, they were just deluged with complaints about this homeless encampment. So I put in a Public Records Act request to see what, if any, complaints they actually received. But I think that would be a really good idea to add that request to find out if they're arresting people for any of these citations that you mentioned. It would help me if you would send me that information. what I've seen a lot of is people who have gotten citations for, oh, having a sign at the side of the road. And there's something that they say, you know, they're interfering with a roadway or trespassing on a roadway or something. So they'll give people a ticket for that, and then, you know, it's $180 or something. They can't pay it, so they end up with a warrant for their arrest. And so then the next time they're picked up, you know, then they're very vulnerable. And that's one of the problems with the people that were at this encampment on Olive and West today in Fresno, is that they have those kinds of issues with law enforcement, and so they're not in a position that they want to be confronted. They'll move when threatened rather than stand up for their rights. And that's, you know, one of the problems we have is that the city police have targeted homeless people and cited them, and then they're vulnerable. So, yeah, that's a good point.
It's one of the problems that we actually all have, Mike. I mean, the drug war has been running off this kind of paranoia for years. People don't want to stand up and deal and, you know, support their friends. Instead, they become snitches and a part of the system because they face these outrageous penalties and so forth. And, you know, people don't want to stand up against the war because it involves a disruption of their lives. I mean, these are real concerns. There's not, you shouldn't make light of them because they are real, you know, realities. But I encourage you, if you can email me again and remind me what you're looking for, I will try to email you back. And in the meantime, I'd encourage folks to go online at indiebay.org/Central Valley. Check out your most recent story. And, you know, thank you very much for passing on that information to us. I got 3 minutes to close the show. Give you a 15-second wrap-up. Go ahead.
Thanks for being there, Robert. It's always a pleasure talking with you and getting this word out to a broader audience. Thanks.
And that was Mike Rhodes. It's Free Radio Santa Cruz you're listening to, 101.1 FM. I'll be back on Sunday at 9:30, and there actually probably be in earlier in the morning. I usually come in with Thomas Levitt way early, and we play some old tapes and babble about it. That's probably going to happen again. Also, Mike Rotkin will be in with attorney David Myberg talking about debating the whole issue of this new law that Rotkin is backing that essentially tries to paper over a big boo-boo, or actually an outrageous practice by the Parks and Rec Department, of trying to stop a swim school from walking across the beach to, you know, do surfing lessons in the water, claiming that somehow the Parks and Rec can monopolize that and can extort money from them for doing that because other swim schools have little kiosks on the beach that they rent from the city and so forth. And they lost that case in court, and now they're doing a quick move to change the law so they can essentially reinforce the authority of the Parks and Rec lifeguards and do what they did downtown in 1994 and 2002, which is to, when the police start harassing people and their people start screaming about it, instead of reining in the police and apologizing and saying, well, let's be more careful, they give the police more powers and say, see, it's always been okay to do that. It's really ridiculous. It's abusive. It reminds me of what Bush does nationally. And it's something we have to stand up against. And you can be, you know, tune into that debate. We'll take call-ins from 10 to 11. I'm going to try to provide a format where I actually am going to simulate the city council as I would like to see it, if I can get this together, whereby Rotkin comes essentially to our city council, our community council, and makes this proposal of a law and has to justify it. And use that kind of a format, he has to bring us the documentation, and we then decide whether the law should be passed as a sort of a people's forum. I think we should have an alternate sort of structure for a lot of the issues that come up, and I think once we have that alternate structure, then people can actually maybe run for city council and get somewhere because they don't have to rely on the staff. They don't have to rely on this establishment that's so well paid and so entrenched and so conservative. It have to have that. We have essentially a people's alternate structure, and that's what I'd like to see happen. And who knows? I mean, it's right now. It's an idea. I don't know how far I'm going to carry it. I don't want to just see Rotkin doing a debate with David Myberg. I want to see sort of something different happen, and maybe it will. This is also being a discussion of this a little bit on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. I've written a little kind of intro to it. You can go there and check that out. And you can come back. Come back on Sunday, and I'll be back then. We can discuss more of these issues, and hopefully you'll have ended the war by then. So far, no invasion of Iran, but don't sit there, you know, playing poker and waiting for, you know, the other shoe to drop. Actually, that's what I'm doing, so I have to talk to myself about that first. But we're in the middle of a war here, and it looks like the Fuhrer isn't going to stop, and that Nancy Pelosi, whatever her goodwill trips to Syria are, isn't going to pass any resolution saying don't invade Iran, because that might offend the Israeli lobby. You know, we don't want to do that. So, thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm going to roll out on what I rolled in on, which is a little more of the George Bush season greetings. I apologize for this, but you're going to be going into some nice, mellow music with From the Cream to the Dregs in a moment when Uncle Dennis comes in. Begin with Bush and the Big Dick. And of course, that's Vice President Cheney, or should I say President Cheney, masquerading as Vice President Cheney.
Good evening. We stand tonight before a new world of chaos.
Never send a monster to do the work of an evil scientist. Now be a cooperative little body and let me have your brain.
Sorry, Doc, but I need what little I've got.
Our enemies,
destructive forces,
have become our partners.
Gunfire and explosions.
Right here at home. Good evening. Good evening.
Test cell phone switch to arm light on.
We stand tonight, night, before a new world of chaos.
Good morning, Americans.
Television is not the truth.
Do you personally believe that?
God gave this land to me.
They're extremists in all parts of the Middle East who want to kill that peace process.
So you listen to me.
The feelings are very strong.
Listen to me.
Make no mistake.
The new threats of terrorism is
extreme.
Television is not the truth.
Train, an ancient land.
The corruption of truth.
United States of America.
She's television, Jim. Bugs Bunny.
That would have been wrong.
The only reality she knows comes to her over the TV set.
A wise and true American.
We have to tell the truth. And the truth is, there's a lot wrong with America.
Assassinations. Larceny. Suicide. Terrorism.
Gunfire.
Bad bombers.
Explosions.
Made my whole body a weapon.
Right here at home.
Chaos and destruction.
And I believe, with all respect, I was right and he was wrong.
We stand tonight.
Break the lawn.
Our enemies have become our partners.
Well, maybe we bit off more than we could chew.
Right here at home.
It is critically important.
Televised.
Do you personally believe that?
What you are about to see is real.
We will do it.
Rockets fired. That was a machine gun.
We will do it.
Was it the right thing to do?
Right intention.
The cause is Americans.
Man, I hope you know what you're doing.
We can do no less.
Bad America.
Our enemies have become our partners.
Mr. President, are you satisfied?
Across our great country.
American military operation.
There's nothing illegal about that.
Classic Cream from 1968 off the also very classic album Wheels of Fire. Starting off side one of the first record, White Room. So we're going to see you again on Sunday, huh, Robert?
I'm afraid so.
Okay, if you haven't had enough of Robert tonight, you can get more fix Sunday morning about 9:30. Robert will be back with more of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Homeless, and He's going to take his gigantic 2-liter tea mug and split the premises. 1.5 liter, I overestimated. Anyway, Robert's out the door. Robert has left the building. I'm Uncle Dennis. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're at 101.1 on your FM dial. We're also at www.freakradio.org. If my voice sounds weird, that's because I've got some kind of throat mange. And I will endeavor to do the show. But I do have a half hour of news coming up at 9 o'clock, environmental update, the Earth First Hour environmental update. And we'll see if we can get through that without too much of tonight's Brew of the Week. We'll opening that here in just a few minutes. And then, of course, stay tuned for all the rest of From the Cream to the Dregs. And we're going to head right on, right back out with some more Eric Clapton at you, this time with John Mayall and the Blues Breakers.
Try a little down.